views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Light shines on Lyme disease. Limelight Radio with Katina Macris is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential to expand awareness and activate change to eliminate Lyme disease for good. Limelight Radio is a much-needed venue for the USA's number one fastest-spreading infectious illness. Katina is an award-winning author, a natural healthcare practitioner with over 30 years' experience, and most importantly, a healing force with her own personal Lyme journey. Be part of a movement to help end the suffering and confusion surrounding Lyme disease and begin to take action. Now here's your host, Katina Macris. Then I go.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Katina Macris, and welcome to Limelight Radio. It is always my privilege to host this show every week to you, spanning the globe, bringing you the latest news on Lyme disease and some of the world's greatest teachers, scientists, advocates, patients, authors. Today we have a very special guest to me, someone that I've admired for a long time, and many of you know her. She's a piece of living history, in my opinion. We have Phyllis Mervine from LymeDisease.org, and let me read you her bio before we get going in conversation. Phyllis Mervine was infected with Lyme disease in California in 1997, but she was not diagnosed until 1987 when she met the great Dr. Paul Lavoie, who saved her life. Dr. Lavoie did a community survey of her neighborhood. This brought researchers up to the area and began a long association with them and a lot of interesting information from their studies in California. She got a job coordinating local Lyme clinic and started the Lyme Times. Fabulous magazine, by the way. When the job ended, she wanted to continue, so she asked the Santa Rosa support group for help forming a nonprofit, and several people volunteered. They kept up the Lyme Times and organized medical conferences and public forums for many years. 2001 was an important milestone for LymeDisease.org. Herb Dorkin became their lobbyist, the first and only Lyme lobbyist in the country. He was able to pass several pieces of legislation to help people stricken from Lyme disease. A game changer for the organization came when Lorraine Johnson, MBA attorney, joined in 2003. Just 3 years later, the CTAG launched their civil investigation of the Infectious Disease Society of America. This was Lorraine's project. She has now published over 40 papers on Lyme disease, including the recent largest ever survey of people with chronic Lyme disease, and holds important positions on national healthcare policy groups. In 2012, Phyllis Mervine was given a Jefferson Award for public service. The Lyme Times is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. Congratulations, Phyllis Mervine, and welcome to Limelight Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh, Phyllis, this is wonderful to have you. I'm so pleased to be able to talk with you, hear about all of these fascinating years. I mean, you have been through so much yourself with the illness. California's stricken. It went under the radar for years, and you've brought so much awareness and really developed such a network of support groups around the country. And the Lyme Times, I love it every month when it comes out. So, really, hats off to you. You're such a hard worker, and you survived the illness yourself. Tell me, if you could, and tell our listeners about the early days. Like, how did you get involved in the Lyme movement, and what kind of spawned the whole activism in you?
Well, I think it was that job at the clinic. My friend knew I was getting interested in Lyme disease, and she had gotten the local clinic doctors to decide to do a Lyme clinic. And I don't know if there are other old-timers out there, but one year we had Newsweek and Time magazine had Lyme on their cover. So that was that era.
Wow.
Back in the late 80s. And so I applied and got hired as the Lyme coordinator. I basically made up my job. And it was only a part-time job because I still had children at home and a lot of other responsibilities. So, but I considered that my day off, going to the office. And
with all those children at home, right?
Yeah, I would, sit around and use the phone because we didn't have computers. We didn't have the Internet in those days. And I'm trying to think how I actually met all the people that I met that had something to do with Lyme or how people found out about me. I really can't even remember. But there was a lot of activity. There were some small support groups here and there in California and then across the country that I found out about. And that's where it all started.
Way back, what was that, in the 1980s, early 90s?
Yeah, it would be 1988, I think. Yeah, and you mentioned that I'd been infected. I actually was infected in 1977, and so then it was 10 years before I was diagnosed, and I just had a lucky break to meet my doctor, Paul Lavoie, and I did this little phone survey of my neighborhood after I was diagnosed, just talking on the phone to my neighbors and asking them about symptoms they might have that could be Lyme and did you get diagnosed with Lyme, and I wrote it up and showed it to him, and
yeah.
I was really surprised that he got so excited about it and said it could be the basis for a community study.
Isn't so that amazing? Because that was in California in that era. You know, they weren't even thinking Lyme that much out there, were they?
Well, no, but it turned out he was. And he was one of the very few doctors who was thinking about Lyme. And he had some very advanced ideas about it and compared it to syphilis. And I remember when I first saw him, he said I might need to be treated for a year. He told me later when I walked in, he thought that maybe I had cancer or something. I looked so bad.
Mm.
But then he started to treat me, and when the year came and went, we stopped talking about the end point because I still wasn't well. But he was willing to go there, and that was sort of unproven, uncharted territory.
Very progressive for him, wasn't it?
Excuse me?
He was very progressive.
Very progressive, yeah. And somewhat, looked at askance by some of his colleagues, too, who thought he was seeing Lyme under every rock.
Right, and you were in Northern California and had a family with young children, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just kind of shows us that the landscape and terrain out there is a prime habitat for the organisms.
Well, it turns out that my area happens to be a hot spot, and there are a number of them in California. And we had, one year, I remember we had 400 reported cases in the state, which you multiply by all the factors that, you know, it's quite a substantial number. And we have a very large now, an online support group in California that has, 1,500 people in it. So there's quite a lot of Lyme in California. And my neighborhood, it turned out, had a rate of Lyme comparable to some highly endemic areas on the East Coast, but it was really unexpected finding.
Yeah, that is, it sort of is an eye-opener for us listening and thinking back at that time historically, that there you were, fortunate enough to have a doctor right in your area, but also how awful, Phyllis, 10 years like that stricken. And I know you had a lot of rheumatoid arthritis type symptoms and the fatigue. It must have been really daunting.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, yeah, I felt like I was going to die young, definitely.
But the 3 years of treatments worked, because here you are all these years later, right?
Well, yeah, it wasn't quite 3 years of treatment. I'm actually, if I go off treatment, I relapse within a few months. So I've been on a maintenance regimen ever since.
Ever since, yeah, you need that support.
I don't know what it's doing to my biome, but the alternative looks worse to me.
Of course, I can imagine. It's a long time to have so many systems of the body get affected by the organisms. So, Phyllis, it's hard for me to believe it, but it's almost time for our first station break. But what I'd love to hear more about when we come back, and I know our listeners would too, is about LymeDisease.org and all of the work that you've done over the years. I'd love for you to share some of the history as you know, we move forward there, and then, of course, get into the current times and the wonderful publication of Lyme Times. So please stay with me, Phyllis Mervine. And listeners, we're just at the very beginning here. Stay tuned. We're taking a commercial break, and we'll be right back with more. This is Limelight Radio with Katina Makris.
World, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, with John G. Sutton, featuring his special guest, Countess Torella, one of Britain's most respected psychic mediums. John is an internationally published author, poet, and professional clairvoyant. His best-selling books include Psychic Pets, featured with John on the Walt Disney Channel, Animal Planet. Currently, John is the feature editor of the monthly Psychic World, which is the UK's Journal of Spiritualism. He has over 30 years of experience working in the field of paranormal studies. Countess Torella has an incredible ability to visualize your future in a positive, passionate way. This show offers all listeners the chance to call in and speak directly to John or the amazing Countess Torella. You can ask your personal questions about love, career, money, relationships, or whatever is troubling you in this often difficult life. What dreams may come? Join John G. Sutton and Countess Torella to discover your answer. See www.psychicworld.net.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Makris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Hello, this is Peter Aquilina, CEO and founder of Deer Defense LLC. For over 15 years, I have been dedicated to tick reduction and the prevention of Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Deer abatement and tick reduction is what we do, and it is all we do. We offer deer fence sales and installation, organic tick sprays, even a simple and inexpensive Lyme risk assessment for your property. Call or email us today at 203-550-8350 or deerdefense@gmail.com. That's deerdefense@gmail.com.
Used clinically by top Lyme doctors, Beyond Balance herbal formulas have helped thousands of patients battle tick-borne disease by providing superior immune system support and enhancing detoxification. Beyond Balance formulas are sold through healthcare professionals. The oral drops contain non-GMO food-grade vegetable glycerin, making them well-tolerated by children and alcohol-sensitive patients. For more information, licensed or certified healthcare practitioners can call BioResource, the exclusive Beyond Balance distributor for the United States and Canada, 800-203-3775.
Tune in to Psychic Cup of Coffee with Kelly Sutliff every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Kelly is a 14-year veteran of psychic ability, and she offers inspiration and comfort to those dealing with grief when they have lost a loved one, and also shares with people that the psychic world is very real. Call 1-800-930-2819 during the show with your questions and visit PsychicMediumKelly.com. That's PsychicMediumKelly.com.
Welcome back back to Limelight Radio, everyone. This is Katina Macris, and that was the beautiful music of Leonel Lorador, who I have the extra surprise of sharing an interview with him at the very end of the show today. After we finish up with Phyllis Mervine, we're going to visit with Leonel. So, Phyllis, let's get back to talking here. This is such important history that you're sharing with us. Please continue on telling us, you know, how things progressed with your organization.
Well, the quick story is I didn't want to stop doing what I was doing when the clinic job ended. And I went down to the support group in Santa Rosa near me and asked for volunteers, and four people raised their hands. We were going to set up a nonprofit. That seemed like the best way to continue. Mm-hmm. And so we were just a bunch of amateurs. I used to call us a do-gooder bunch of old ladies. We weren't really very old, but we decided that we could put on medical conferences, which we did, and we would put on patient forums, and we also kept up with the Lyme Times, which grew from a two legal sheets folded in half into a little booklet into a pretty fat newsprint magazine for many years. And so we weren't very, I just felt like what we were doing could inspire other people to do it too. We were bootstrap people. We were people that were trying to help ourselves and help others, and nobody else was helping us. The government wasn't helping us. The doctors weren't helping us. And we had to help ourselves and each other. So my main goal was to empower, to educate, and to inspire. And so we used to run stories from different parts of the country and let people know the things that other people were doing, hoping that they would say to themselves, I can do that. And then we would lend them a hand to try to help them start helping themselves, basically.
That's terrific. That's really terrific. I love those words. Those are my words, too. Empower, educate, and inspire. I really resonate with you on that. Yeah, so you kind of started like almost a daisy chain when you think about it, hands holding hands across the country.
Yeah. Well, I was amazed by the reception that the Lyme Times got. And in the early days, we used to put letters from readers in there. And they would say things like, I read it from cover to cover the minute it arrives. Or they'd say, it's my Bible. I mean, there was just no information out there. And just like now, people are being told, you don't have Lyme, or it's not here, or you had your 2 weeks of treatment, you should be better. And so to have a source for information that brought, and we always would try to summarize the research that was going on too, so people had a source of information that they could understand more about their illness.
Yeah, that's tremendous. And, you know, I was reading your 25th anniversary issue, which is fabulous, by the way. And it was really wonderful to see, you know, back 20 years ago when you're having some of these articles, Dr. Boscano, Dr. Liegner, you know, names that we now know are so famous. There you were sharing information with, you know, with your readers right up front and center. It was a lifeline, I'm sure.
Yeah, and actually, Joe Boscano came to our very first medical conference in 1990, and as you may have seen in the anniversary issue, his mouth just fell open when he saw that picture that we had of him. He looks like such a kid.
He does. He's so cute with his dark curly hair, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We found that buried in a drawer somewhere because, of course, nobody had cell phones in those days, and we never thought to take pictures, but we lucked out and had that one.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, so then you just kept working really hard. I mean, besides the Lyme Times, which now is, you know, really a beautiful magazine, you then, you know, developed into doing political work and legislation work, right?
Well, I remember thinking, how, like Pinocchio, how do I turn into a real boy? I could never quite figure out how to make the organization into what I thought of as a real organization. And I think a lot of people out there think that they can't do it. Well, we really didn't have any experience either running an organization. I'd never been on even on any boards before. So we really didn't know what we were doing, but we just muddled along, and we did some things right along the way. And the main thing was, I think, is just hanging in there. Just keep on going. Mm-hmm. And then you're like a snowball. You start with a little snowball, and you roll through the snow, and other people start to stick to you. You're going in the same direction. They want to go with you, and you start gathering up all these people with different kinds of skills. And I think that's how we got Lorraine Johnson, who was a patient and was getting better, and one of our board members brought her to a meeting. And I just, when I met Lorraine, it was like, you're the person we've been waiting for. She just had such a sense of direction, and has this great MBA, and I'd recommend any group starting up try to get an MBA on board, because they just have a way of looking at things and knowing how to move things forward. And I think that was really a turning point for us.
Yes, that must have been a huge asset for you. And I've met Lorraine. She is a dynamo and so directed and organized, and I can see, as you said, from your grassroots level, to bring on that level of professionalism was such a strong, foundational corner. So, Phyllis, Lorraine came to you then, like in the early, around 2001, 2003, somewhere in there, and that's when you really started making inroads with California.
Well, it's hard to know. When you're a nonprofit, you have to have the big picture. You know what's happening, and people are really getting the short end of the stick, but you don't really know how to address it. You just, write letters to the editor, but you have to actually get ahead of the curve, because you don't want always to be in a reacting mode. You want to be making news yourself. You want to be in front of the curve. You want to create your own programs and have them scrambling to catch up with you and to react. So the Connecticut Attorney General in a civil investigation of the Infectious Diseases Society of America, that was an idea that Lorraine and her husband and a friend of theirs who was an antitrust lawyer came up with. And it took years of work to get this off the ground. And we used connections, our friends in Connecticut that were close to the Attorney General provided an introduction, and they had to sell the project to the Attorney General's staff to look at the behavior of the Infectious Diseases Society as an anti-competitive practices. And the reason it worked was because the IDSA uses their guidelines as kind of a hammer. Everybody who doesn't follow their guidelines is vulnerable to prosecution by the state medical boards, for one, and insurance companies don't pay for anything that doesn't conform to those guidelines. So mm-hmm. This was viewed as being anti-competitive. And so that was why that case was able to move forward.
Yeah, so Connecticut was a help for you, and you were able to bridge with them.
Well, some people don't understand, since the review of the guidelines that they agreed to do under the settlement did not result in any substantial changes to the guidelines, and we're still stuck with the same guidelines.
Mm.
People don't really see what that accomplished. But what it accomplished was that it really it leveled the playing field. It made us a force to be reckoned with. After that, we noticed that if we said something, the IDFA had their eye on us and that they would respond. They didn't dare just give us the back of the hand the way we, before this happened, we were just a bothersome gnat, buzzing around, but we had no power to do anything. But after this, the whole thing shifted so that we had a much more powerful voice. Sometime after that, they, even at one of the IDSA conferences, they had a point counterpoint set up where they had one guy speaking to their point of view, and then they had Ray Stricker speaking on the other side, and there was an article published in one of their journals about this. So it really did move, you know, it was like a chink in the armor.
Oh my gosh, tremendously so. I can really sense that from what you're conveying to us. So Phyllis, stay with me. It's time for station break, and audience, stay tuned. We're going to come back with Phyllis Mervine from LymeDisease.org. This is Katina Makris with Limelight Radio. Stay tuned.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com, or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
Are physical pain and illness controlling your life? Are you ready to release what no longer serves you, but just cannot get there on your own? Consider an intuitive healing session with Christy Borst. Christy's love-based healing energy has had amazing, even miraculous effects on her in-person and long-distance clients. Visit healingresonance.us. That's healingresonance.us to book your private intuitive healing session with Christy.
Laura Longley is on a mission to remove stuckness from your life for good and replace it with happiness. Tune in Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for The Laura Longley Show, where authentic change takes flight. Say yes to that inspired you and goodbye to your stuckness as Laura and her guests deliver powerful ways to work through common problems in this fun and unique hit show.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Makris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on the diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Hello, this is Peter Aquilina, CEO and founder of Deer Defense, LLC. For over 15 years, I have been dedicated to tick reduction and the prevention of Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Deer abatement and tick reduction is what we do, and it is all we do. We offer deer fence sales and installation, organic tick sprays, even a simple and inexpensive Lyme risk assessment for your property. Call or email us today at 203-550-8350 or deerdefense@gmail.com. That's deerdefence@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Limelight Radio, everyone. This is Katina Makris, and we are in the midst of a very informative, powerful discussion with Phyllis Mervine from California out at LymeDisease.org. Phyllis is a living piece of history. 25 years now we've had the Lyme times, and some very fundamental work has been done by LymeDisease.org. So, Phyllis, tell me where we're at now. What are you involved in? What are your passions? What's the mission of the organization? I know so much is going on.
Well, I think one of my main passions has been to create a community where we're all coordinated and kind of working together in the same direction. And so with that in mind, back in, I think it was 2006, I started setting up these online state-based support groups and talking to people in different states and recruiting moderators for the groups. And so we've got a fairly active, some states, of course, are more active than others, but this network of state-based groups. So we have, like, Massachusetts Lyme, we have Colorado Lyme, Idaho Lyme, Virginia Lyme. They're all actually Yahoo groups.
Mm-hmm.
So these groups, we're able to communicate with people, so when there's something of national interest, we can posted on the group. Of course, we have our Facebook page, too, and a lot of people are on Facebook. But these other groups allow more a different kind of discussion. It doesn't disappear so fast like Facebook. Things seem to disappear down the page so fast. But with these discussions, it doesn't do that. So there's advantages to that. And people have different states have used those groups to promote events, to raise funds, to pass legislation, and it's a way that they can talk to other people in their state. So
yeah, it's fabulous, and even it's a great way, too, to network across the country from group to group to group, isn't it?
Well, each person, say you're in Massachusetts and you join Massachusetts Lyme, you don't really have a way of knowing what people in Connecticut are talking about on Connecticut Lyme.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything comes up of national significance, we can let people know. But the point was to get, no other group really cares where you live. And we thought there's a lot of things that happen at the state level. There's state health departments, there's state medical boards, there's state governments. And so it makes sense to have some mechanism for people within a state to talk to each other and to find out about each other and to cook things up, you know,
mm-hmm.
come up with ideas for what they can do in their state. So those have worked very well. I've been really happy with those. So then the other thing I've been doing, we designed a brochure for California years ago. The advantage of designing your own brochure is that you can say things that the state brochure is not going to say. Like, we can tell people about the two standards of care, that there's not just one way to treat Lyme, there's actually two. We can give people, we can recommend certain labs, for instance. The state's not going to do that. We like our brochure, and I've actually helped several other states put together brochures based on our template. So Minnesota, for example, used our template. Georgia used our template. Connecticut has a LymeDisease.org brochure. And
that's great.
I'm working on others. So I really think it's important for people, for advocates in any state, to have their own brochure. We tailor it to your state, and it just makes you more credible. If you're talking about Lyme disease to a legislator or to somebody in the public, even, to pick it up and say, oh, Lyme disease in Alabama or whatever, you know, and so it gives a little, it's a starting point for people to become more credible.
I love it. And Phyllis, you know, I can't help but think as I'm listening to you, you've had such vision all along, my gosh, and you're still, you know, your vision still carries you forward. I mean, where do you see the future? What would you like to see unfold?
Well, I'm looking right now at the people in New York are working really hard to get a doctor protection law. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's right on the edge right now of happening. They've been working on this for over a decade, and there's the usual roadblocks. It really blows my mind that the medical societies oppose legislation that actually gives their doctors, their members, more freedom, more discretion to use their own clinical judgment. There's such a prejudice against Lyme disease that they're willing to cut their nose despite their face. It's just, to me, it's incredible.
It really is.
But
shocking, really.
Yeah, we are, there's Massachusetts is working on legislation right now, Pennsylvania. So at the moment, we have to do it piecemeal because there's no national policy. But the states, you know, it just makes more work. But the patients are really... There's been more and more, and every time there is one, you can use that as a stepping stone in your own state. You could say, look, Connecticut did this one, Virginia did this one, and, you know, talk to your own legislators about doing it. But be very, very careful, because if you do go this route, very small differences in language can make a huge difference.
I bet so.
It's
so
good
if people
to get
want
advice.
To reach out at a various level for assistance from LymeDisease.org, what's the best route for them to do that?
Well, just to send an email to contact@LymeDisease.org, and we do have a phone number. I think nobody wanted to put their own home phone number on our website. We don't have an office. We're just we're a virtual group, so we're sort of spread all over the state. But people do find us. My phone number's out there, but it's not officially linked with our website. So we do talk to people, and we get them in touch with, say you're thinking of a bill, you know, I would send you the contact info people that have worked on bills in their own state to let you know what the pitfalls are, what to watch out for, what the path is like, because sometimes you have to get up at, you know, in the middle of the night because somebody in the, you know, they've had a late session and suddenly somebody comes up with something and it changes the scene. So you have to be ready at a moment's notice sometimes when you're working with legislators.
Yes, that's unfair. I can imagine. It can be tippy toes sometimes.
So there's a lot of people in the country now who have experience and they're willing to handhold. And we know who those people are, and so, you know, we would try to put the two of you together.
That's terrific. And also I want to say before we finish our time together, Phyllis, that you've got wonderful blogging sites, too. Dorothy Leyland has that terrific site, Touched by Lyme, right?
Yeah, and we have, Lyme Policy Wonk, where Lorraine Johnson goes into some of the more esoteric, to me, very interesting points that she is interested in. And then I have a Lyme Times blog that sometimes I put something up on there. I just put up an old story that Pam Weintraub wrote for a Lyme Times years ago on Dr. Jones, which is just a beautiful story.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
I posted that in a series of, I think it was 7 blogs a few weeks ago. So if people
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Phyllis, I can't believe it. It's flown by. I can't believe our time is up. I have to say it's been a true privilege with you visiting today. I'd love it if you could come back in the future. Would there be time for you perhaps later in the fall or winter?
Oh, sure.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Get in touch, yeah.
One little final question to you as we part. What has Lyme disease taught you?
Oh, that it's if you want change, it takes a long time. You just need to keep working, and you might never see the whole dream realized in your lifetime, but at least you know that you've been fighting on the right side.
Oh, that's wonderful. Hats off to you. You're an Artemis, I can tell. Thank you, Phyllis Mervine, for joining me today on Limelight
Radio.
Thanks
for having
me. It's been really a pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Stay tuned, everyone. We're going to come back with Leonel Lorador, musician. Thank you, Phyllis Mervine. Thank you, LymeDisease.org. Stay tuned. This is Katina Makris with Limelight Radio.
Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life, too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Where do you desire to go in life? How do you plan to get there? Are you only looking outside yourself for the answers? What if you use your soul's wisdom to lead the way? So what is the soul, and how do you access this wisdom? Soul Suitcase with Victoria Cohen will unpack these questions and help you tap into and trust your own inner voice to solve everyday problems. Your Soul Suitcase is a treasure chest of wisdom inside you waiting to be discovered. Listen to Soul Suitcase on TransformationTalkRadio.com and discover how awakening to your inner voice transforms your life.
Hey, Dr. Joe Dispenza here. Just wanted to take a moment and thank everybody for listening to me on the Dr. Pat Show. People who want to know where they can order the book, you can get it on Amazon as a pre-order. Our release date is April 29th of this year. If you pre-order, you can get some really great downloads, testimonials of people that actually heal themselves of cancer and some chronic conditions. In addition to that, you'll get the 4 principles of what it takes to have a remission of a disease. Thank you so much for the opportunity to contribute. Hope to see you in the future.
Hello, this is Peter Aquilina, CEO and founder of Deer Defense LLC. For over 15 years, I have been dedicated to tick reduction and the prevention of Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Deer abatement and tick reduction is what we do, and it is all we do. We offer deer fence sales and installation, organic tick sprays, even a simple and inexpensive Lyme risk assessment for your property. Call or email us today at 203-550-8350 or deerdefense@gmail.com. That's deerdefence@gmail.com.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Makris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on the diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Limelight Radio, everyone. This is Katina Makris. We've been having a wonderful show today. Thank you, Phyllis Mervine, for joining us from LymeDisease.org. And to all our listeners, you have been hearing for the past couple weeks the beautiful music, the guitar sounds of Leonel Lorador, who is a wonderful musician that I found in New York City last month. And I'm so appreciative of his beautiful music. It's so touching and very healing for so many of us that have been sick. And I have the great good fortune to introduce to you today We've got him live on air. We've got Leonel Lorador, who originally is from Portugal and now performs in New York City and is such a talented artist. So welcome, Leonel, to Limelight Radio.
Hi, Katina. This is I'm very happy to be here with you and sharing with the audition and the radio audition.
Yeah,
and, I'm very happy
wonderful.
To be here. Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Great. Yeah.
Yes. So I want to first tell the audience how we met. Please tell the audience how we met. It's cute.
I was performing at 34th Street and 6th Avenue and Herald Square. For Music in New York, which is a program that comes from MPA. There is a musical program, and I'm performing there, selling my CDs and getting my tips, and I see this wonderful lady approaching me, and I saw her CDs, so we exchanged contact and everything, and here we are.
Here we are.
So that was a good vibe. It's something that happened very, very good.
With serendipity, it's when things are meant to be, you meet the right person at the right time, and Leonel's music filling up the station for all of you listeners that know New York City. When you travel on the subways and you're underneath, there's actually good acoustics down there. And there was Leonel's gorgeous guitar music, which has a very strong flavor of Spanish flamenco. So tell me, Leonel, how did you first get started with your guitar music?
Well, my father played the guitar, and my brother started learning, and I kind of catch the guitar here and there when I was a kid, like I would say 7, 8, 9, and really, little by little start performing, and I studied the clarinet as well. I studied some solfège, some music, some reading. I was in the conservatory in Faro, which is the capital district for the Algarve, south part of Portugal. So I started to go on my own and reading and playing classical guitar as well. And I have to say that listening to my father performing and all that was very... very special, but somehow I didn't learn much. I mean, somehow he was not towards teaching very much. But I went on my own, and luckily in the army time, I also joined an orchestra, a big band orchestra in Lisbon, and I performed the bass there. I did 45, 46 concerts all over. Well, it was a great experience. Also entering the conservatory in Lisbon there, because I was enrolled in the big band army. So this is more or less my project. Besides, when I was 18 years old, I was invited to perform in a rock band in Faro, and the rock band was pretty good rock and roll, and I matched, and I was so happy about it. And we opened up for Dr. Phil Booth, which is a rhythm blues band from England, I believe, and they did 3 concerts in Yoga, which 2 of those we opened up, and it was like a dream coming true that I had when I was a kid. I wanted to perform, and when I reached 18, I had to perform some rock and roll, I thought to myself, and I did it. And I wanted to go to the big band in the orchestra, and I don't know what happened, but I was there, and I couldn't believe it. That's a funny story, because my sister's husband, major in the army, mentioned about the orchestra. And while I was doing the conservatory, I mentioned, wow, I'd love to do it. And my sister said, well, I don't know, that's like a big high-end kind of thing to do. And I didn't say anything, but you know what? I learned about it. They needed some new musicians there, because they had a couple of civil musicians. They needed really a bass player, really bad, and a keyboard player. So luckily, I studied the Casadas de Monte, which is like a very hard kind of piece. And I went there performing. They saw the level of reading music and all that. So
that's fantastic.
In two months, I learned the repertoire of the orchestra, and it was a very great experience for me. I didn't want to stay in the army, because somehow I didn't see the army to be something for me. I had dreams, and I came to America because of the dreams.
And this was the army in Portugal. Army in Portugal?
Yes, yes, like a big band.
Yeah. Okay, big band. Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
And we played Glenn Miller.
Oh, right.
I mean, many,
Tommy
many,
Dorsey.
Many
yeah.
American
right.
Patro, and right. maybe even Scorpions and Paul McCartney. Well, that was a great experience. And here, I became to the United States in 1980. You're right, here in 1986, December 7th, the infamous date, like we all know. And I did my GED. I went to school. I graduated. I did music. I switched my major from music to Spanish, and the music became a minor, and I graduated before I went to my immigration interview to get my papers, my residency, I would say, after mm-hmm. 15 years of being here.
Wow.
Like, yeah, yes. And I worked very hard. I went to school, so I graduated in 2001.
Congratulations.
With a major in Spanish and modern languages, a minor in music, and... I started to work as a teacher. I started in Newark. I did Verona, Montclair, my last job, which unfortunately I didn't keep because yeah. of the problems of the economics. And so I went unemployed because I didn't have the tenure in Montclair. Somehow I moved
right.
from districts. But for a better move, but anyway, it happened. So here I am unemployed and starting playing performing. And my wife mentions, why don't you try the street there? We can go to New York and see these guys playing in the subway. This guy, Mike Schumann, playing the violin. He's a Russian Jew, I guess, playing beautifully and with a great singing, great sound. And I said, why can't I play here too as well? So I started first in Union Square, and I played in the park. I played a couple of times, and I said, wow, this is pretty good. But then I got a ticket because I didn't have an authorization to perform with a with
oh,
a
Oh, jeez, you need a permit or something, right? You need a permit.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I saw a guy playing the saxophone across the street in one of the adjacent streets, you know, right in the perimeter of the square. And he tells me, no, you can be here. All right. So no ticket from the park. And I got the permit from the police station. I used to have a pretty good deal. And performed it there 3-4 times and worked out very nice.
Nicely.
Then I sent my recordings to MTA,
yeah.
the music under New York.
I was wondering
province.
That's what it is. So you go through MTA, the Mass Transit Authority, and that's how you apply then to get into the...
Right. Lots of people see performance and sometimes they don't know what's the structure of that. You just think some guy... sitting here, open up the thing and the guitar case.
Yeah,
and,
so it's
but the music in New York is a program.
The MTA
that you have
system
to apply.
That you are able to apply then and get the position.
Well, yes, you send your recordings. If they like it, they select you to an audition, which happens every May around the 13th, 14th, whatever. You go and you have, in my case, my situation, I went there like already 3 years ago and. I performed on the, like, 68 groups and individuals. And
so, Lynn, now...
I would approve. And from then on, you have, like, a workshop. They give you a banner. You call every other week, and they send you an ID card with the sites and the timings of the hours for your performance. So that's basically how the program works.
That's how the program works. Well, it's fantastic because I got to meet you that way. And so I want people to know your website so they can go and get some of your music because you have several CDs available and they're also gorgeous. Tell everyone that's listening your website.
Yeah, my website is www.loradores, L-O-R-A-D, as in David O-R, Loradores. .com is you can see me also in YouTube if you put my name on your mail order. You can see me performing on some type of the subway system.
Yes,
and other stations.
You also do other events too, don't you? Because I'm going to have you come and perform at my party in New York for my book in the fall. So
I'm glad.
I know, that's going to be fun. So you do other events too, don't you?
Sure. So basically, I'm on a website located in Connecticut, which is called Beat Masters. And it's a very well-designed website, which I have. I got jobs like wedding ceremonies. I have cocktail hours. I don't know, birthday parties, christenings, bridal showers. Then some people call me out of the blue to perform on recordings. I had actually Jim Johnston from the WWE in Connecticut calling me to perform on a lead guitar melody that he wrote on this movie. What is that, The Reunion?
That's fantastic.
You can find it on Netflix. The Reunion, you can listen to my guitar making a couple of phrases there. Actually, Jim Johnson's beautiful acoustic guitar. And so things like that happen, it makes me very happy about it. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I have to say it's so sad because our time is coming up with our very quick visit with you today. But I want everyone to know that I'm playing Lionel Lorador's music on Limelight Radio this week and the next couple weeks to come because I'm so supportive of your beautiful music and your beautiful expression. Your expression is what gives so much meaning to your sound, and even though you'll know some of the songs like Whiter Shade of Pale and Europa, Lionel has some of his own personal creations too, which are beautiful. So thank you, Lionel, for joining me today on the show.
My pleasure, and I hope I didn't speak too much.
No,
I just project a little idea about what I did.
It's
really appreciate so much the opportunity, and I hope you can listen to my music. And that's great.
Thank you so much, Lionel. You are a gem. And everyone, please visit Lorador, LORADOR.com to listen to this beautiful music and get some CDs of Lionel's. And thank you, audience. We've had a gorgeous show today. We learned so much from Phyllis Mervine. The Lyme disease situation continues to expand around the globe. And join us every week as we continue our conversation and dialogue on the world's fastest growing infectious disease epidemic, and I am here to help you all. Thank you. This is Katina Macris with Limelight Radio.
I don't know what's up there beyond the sky.
You've been listening to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. Tune in each Wednesday at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Get ready for some of the most provocative conversation with leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. If you've missed any part of this hit radio show, visit LimelightRadio.com. That's LimelightRadio.com. We'll see you next week on Limelight Radio with Katina Macris.
Then I go to my brother. I say, brother, help me, please.
Psychic World, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, with John G. Sutton, featuring his special guest, Countess Torella. One of Britain's most respected psychic mediums, John is an internationally published author, poet, and professional clairvoyant. His best-selling books include Psychic Pets, featured with John on the Walt Disney Channel, Animal Planet. Currently, John is the feature editor of the monthly Psychic World, which is the UK's Journal of Spiritualism. He has over 30 years of experience working in the field of paranormal studies. Countess Torella has an incredible ability to visualize your future in a positive, passionate way. This show offers all listeners the chance to call in and speak directly to John or the amazing Countess Torella. You can ask your personal questions about love, career, money, relationships, or whatever is troubling you in this often difficult life. What dreams may come? Join John G. Sutton and Countess Torella to discover your answer. See www.psychicworld.net.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Hello, this is Peter Aquilina, CEO and founder of Deer Defense LLC. For over 15 years, I have been dedicated to tick reduction and the prevention of Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Deer abatement and tick reduction is what we do, and it is all we do. We offer deer fence sales and installation, organic tick sprays, even a simple and inexpensive Lyme risk assessment for your property. Call or email us today at 203-550-8350 or deerdefense@gmail.com. That's DEERDEFENCE@gmail.com.